From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Director Wong Kar-wai made his feature film debut in 1989. He's made a few films since then. In 1994, his film Ashes of Time was his first take on the Hong Kong action film. He's returned to it now with his newest film, The Grandmaster, which may be the most compact title he's ever used. He is one of the most influential and important filmmakers of the last 30 years. One of his crowning achievements and one of the best films of the 21st century is a little film called In the Mood for Love. He is sitting across from me. It is my honor to finally have you here and meet you. Thanks so much for being here, Kar-wai.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction, Elvis.
I guess one of the things I would ask you about in terms of doing The Grandmaster is it's a real historical piece.
Yes, right.
What made you decide to do a film like such a film at this point in your career?
I was always a big fan of kung fu film.
Oh, you worked on quite a few of them.
No. The thing is, when I listen to the introductions, there's a difference between the Ashes of Time and The Grandmaster. Ashes of Time is, in the Chinese genre, is more like Lord of the Rings, because there's no historical background, and it's more like fantasy. And Grandmaster actually is not a fantasy, because it's based on real figures. A man who's the person who trained Bruce Lee. And the reason I want to make this film is I always want to make a kung fu film. I was growing up on the street with martial arts school, but I was not allowed to learn, because in those days, you can imagine martial arts school is not like, we call them mo gun. It's not exactly like the martial arts school today, or just they don't have high windows, clean uniform. In those days, it's very dark, mysterious. But the thing is, in the film, Grandmaster, there's a scene. You can actually see a kid standing outside of a school that ran by a Yip Man at that point, and you can see the face of the kid. He looked inside. And he's so curious. And in a film, that could be Bruce Lee, or that could be me, because I'm that kind of person when I was a kid.
So many of your films are about people glimpsing from the camera, being voyeuristic. I mean, that sort of sense of being outside, looking in a window, being kept outside. That's a theme that's kind of run through a lot of your work, isn't it?
It's not conscious, but I always attracted by image like this, or it's always about the longing for certain things. Because in a film, in The Grandmaster, there's two main characters, Yip Man and Gong Er. One, a man, and the other one is a woman from the north. They are both not typical fighters, because when we look at the story of Yip Man, he came from a very rich family. He never worked before 40. And Gong Er is the daughter of a grandmaster. But at the time, women has no positions in the martial art world. They are always excluded, even though she has all the talents and she can be the successor. So I think what makes these two persons interesting in this film is, at a time, it's almost like the golden time of Chinese martial art. We can see there's two persons which they are not the typical or the traditional martial artists.
Also, in these movies, deals so much with the way music rules people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of music, Western pop and Asian music. It's this mix of the worlds,
mm-hmm.
these culture clashes, and how they sort of like make people outsiders as well. I mean, Yip Man and that hat.
Right.
I mean, that's that's a beautiful fedora. That's a very Western thing for him to have. And it tells us, as soon as we see him, that he is in this world, but not mm-hmm. of it, doesn't it?
Because when you look at the story of Yip Man, he was educated in Hong Kong when he was 12 in a Western school. His background is his family ran the import-export business. So his father actually wanted him to be a businessman. So in a way, he's very Westernized. So I want to capture that, especially in 1930 in the South Fosan, because it is a port. So it's major places that's commerce happening. And there's a lot of like fusion of East and West. So in fact, what I'm trying to do is, I think we have seen a lot of films about the Chinese brothel. In a film, the first chapter of the film, it happened mainly in a brothel. But in those days, brothel is not what we consider like a brothel today. It's almost like a social club.
And you go through great pains to show what that's like in this film.
Yes.
That kind of glamorized version, almost a movie-influenced version
right.
of what a brothel looks like.
Right. And the interesting thing is they are not only playing traditional Chinese music, but also there's like a jazz. And it's an interesting time. It's almost like a Paradise Lost, you know.
It's very much that. It's the treatment. I am honored to have Wong Kar-wai sitting across from me. We're talking about his newest film, The Grandmaster, but I'm not going to limit it to just that, because as you talk about this, those schisms between Eastern and Western music
right.
and the way Western music sets your characters apart runs through every film you've made, mm-hmm. that thing. Talk about what Western music meant to you growing up.
Well, my childhood basically can be made into like a radio program because...
Well, that's why you're on radio to talk about it.
Yes, that's why I always want to do I'm very happy to do like radio program because that's my childhood. Because we moved to Hong Kong when I was 5 and we don't have much relatives. It's almost like a man in a film.
You like the outsider you made so many films about.
Exactly. So the only thing that I noticed when I first came to Hong Kong is the sound of the cities. Just imagine just like a kid, like 5 or 6 years old, you don't speak the language, and somehow it gives you a color. It's like if there's a song from Elvis Presley and you're in a flat with so many different activities, some people playing mahjong, and you can see the streets outside. So it gives you a chemistry. I think that's the beginning about my fascination of putting different music against different background.
But there's so much of the stuff you've done in terms of music, the Beijing opera you've used, or even like the influence of American opera and the pop is so much about romantic music for you.
Right.
I mean, what were some of those songs you heard as a kid that set some of these longings off for you? Because longing in music, again, runs through so much of what you have done.
No, today I don't go for to use the music to describe the scene. And it's sometimes I did it very random. In a film, before the fight, it's in a brothel, but somehow I feel I don't want to use those action music or suspense music. In a way, I want to use an opera. The reason I want to use an opera is the way I see this brothel, normally in a brothel, is we look at these girls or these beautiful women is from a male's perspective. But just imagine in a brothel, these high quality women, they have so many experience with men. In a way, they are judging the man. They are not the persons to be judged. And I want to shoot this brothel like a cathedral, a church. So I find it very interesting to use music like that.
And one of the things that really runs through this film a lot, maybe more than any time you've done before, is using the camera angle as a way of sort of judging. When we meet these women, they're almost standing like on a judging stand,
yes.
and we look up at them, and
exactly.
they're looking down at us. And that point of view happens a lot. I mean, the first time we see Yip Man, he's basically looking down at people.
Right.
You do that a lot in this movie, using that perspective, that point of view,
mm-hmm.
as a way of telling us who's in command
yes.
and who is learning.
But we already know, because the audience may not be conscious about that, but it's the habit of the way we look at people, right? But you have to imagine this is a kung fu film, so you can expect there will be a lot of cuts and camera movement during the action scene. So I want to keep it like that, to make the setup for like the non-action part as static as possible.
It's interesting because those sequences, when they aren't action sequences, when the characters are talking, using the camera to tell us who is the master, the grandmaster, in effect, right. in the shot, and who is the disciple,
right.
are very formal shots. This is some of the most formal composition stuff you've done in the movie.
When I'm doing the research for this film, I noticed like the only reference, the visual reference from the archive are mainly group shots, either after dinner or before competitions or before a match. And even like the family photo is basically, so I'm thinking, well, I want to use it as a motif of the film. So every chapter start almost like a family shot, a group shot, a shot from the archive. So they are very, very formal. In a way, when I'm doing this research, meeting all these masters on the row, I noticed the world, the classical, the traditional Chinese martial art world, they have a lot of rituals and they are very formal. In fact, like the master and the students, they have a way to have these formalities. When the master's talking, the student's always standing. They will never sit down. And it's a very, very formalistic approach, manner in this martial art world. So I want to keep it this way.
But that formality, even watching Ashes of Time again after I saw the Grandmaster, I was really struck how you want to contain the energy in this, because Ashes of Time, you're using a lot of masters to get all of that action in. But here, that formality you're talking about is almost even extends to the way that Yip Man fights. It's almost like he's extending a hand,
right.
and a handshake every time. And you concentrate on the hand contact.
Right.
I mean, that is another way of sort of keeping that theme of formality going through this. I mean, the ritualistic thing we're talking
about.
Yeah,
because like when you compare Grandmaster to Ashes of Time, the people in Ashes of Time, they are like hippies. It's like Woodstock.
It's a pop film versus an operatic film. It
exactly.
really is that.
The thing is, for the action scenes, I want to do a hardcore kung fu film. It's not going to be something...
With almost no colors in it, by the way.
Yeah, no flashy things. There's nothing against gravities. Everything has to be authentic. And that's why I want, like, Tony and Zhang Ji to get training for, like, very hard training for 2 years. And the thing is, to shoot the action scene on this film, we are not only having Yuan Houping, our action choreographer, on set to choreograph. We choreograph with all the different masters from different schools. They are like the consultants. They train Tony and they train Ji. So every time on set, we have to involve them. But the thing is, with all these masters, it's very hard sometimes to convince them, because they will always tell you, they said, well, if he's the grandmaster, if he's that good, we never fight for 10 minutes. It's only one punch. Or one kick. And sometimes it's so fast, you won't be able to see it. But it's impossible for us to shoot a film like this, you know, action scene with one punch. But we analyze their mechanisms. It's like, for the Chinese martial art, the stance is very important. It's always about balance. When we look at a very old master, maybe he's in his 70s, just a retired worker, normal person. But once, when he do a demonstrations, you see the beauty of it. He's a different person. Every move is so perfect. It's, and the stance, they start, because the footwork is very important. And we want to keep that in the film, to analyze the action. And because it's so fast, so how can you focus or to emphasize on the speed?
So and by doing that, to do that, you basically emphasize the hands
yeah.
and the feet. And we should say here, you're talking about Tony Leung. This is your seventh collaboration with him. So
yes,
I guess you felt you had to really beat him up this time around. And Ziyi Zhang. We'll take a break. I'm thrilled to be talking to Wong Kar-wai. His new film is The Grandmaster. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW's Eclectic 24 is our ever-expanding all-music stream, featuring the best new releases, classic favorites, and special features, including today's top tune, guest DJ project, and KCRW archives. Listen worldwide anytime online or through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out at kcrw.com/eclectic24.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm talking to Wong Kar-wai about just about everything, including his new film, The Grandmaster. Something I've got to say to you. I can't think of another filmmaker who concentrates on clothes as much as you do, and a way clothes can either bind people or liberate them. I mean, you think about those outfits in Ashes of Time, which are basically stage outfits that they're wearing. They're outfits of people who... they're daring you to not look at them.
Right.
And by virtue of that, you got to fight them because the outfits are so aggressive.
Right.
And then the clothes here, what Tony wears as Ip Man, it's almost like priestly garb.
Right.
It's something that a Western monk would wear, really.
Right.
But black, but very much open for movement. Even when the clothes are wet, I'm aware of fabrics. Mm-hmm. What does that fascination for you and fabric come from? Again, there's nobody else that does that.
Because in this film... it's the story is at the very beginning. We have to define the North and the South. The country is divided, and the martial arts school is also divided. And the people in the South, they have those fabrics, especially in Foshan. It's almost like ink, very dark. But
it almost absorbs light the way you shoot them.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's very cool because they make with certain chemicals. And the only thing you will notice for like the Chinese costumes, especially for men, is the difference is only about the collar. And the collar is so hot that it gives you a certain form. When you put it on, you become very formal. And so we have to show the difference. And our costume designer, William, he did all the costume of my film, and he's very precise about this. It's very hard for the actors. It's because when you're doing the fight, your neck is always like trapped, you know. But it gives you the look. A costume is not just a costume. It's not something that makes the actors look good or the actress look beautiful. In a way, it's part of the character. It's like a uniform.
It is that. I mean, it's very much that, like I'm saying and what you just said. As soon as we see the characters in your movies in these costumes, we know exactly who and what they are and how free they are in their own lives. I mean, either they use these costumes as kind of an armor to protect themselves and to offer a message that they are not, or the costumes reveal exactly everything is that they have to offer. But they do tend to be very glamorous. I mean...
yeah. The thing is, these two characters, Gong Er and Ip Man, in that time... in this period, they are basically at the peak of their life. It belongs to a certain social class. It's called an aristocrat, almost like aristocrat.
But they're also movie aristocrats. I mean, we see Gong Er and those. And there's a terrific fight on a train platform.
Right.
It's like basically like watching Julie Christie from Dr. Zhivago in a fight. That's pretty wonderful.
I still remember. So we have this. Like the coat for Zhang Ji on that scene. And Yuan Huping, our action choreographer, when he looked at this...
who we should say has done any number of things, probably most famous in this country, The Matrix.
Yes, Matrix, and like Crouching Tigers, and he's amazing. And when he looked at this costume, he said, William, can you make it a little bit more loose? It's too perfect. And I'm afraid like Ji cannot move.
Yeah, that was a costume that was obviously made for her to just stand next to the train and wave at it as it went by or something.
And then Zhang Yi said, well, I can move. I want to keep it that way. It looks good on me.
But I've got to think that actors have to love being in your movies just because, in a way, you said these characters are aristocrats, but in a way, almost every protagonist you've made a movie about has been an aristocrat in one way or another, hasn't he?
Well, they are well treated.
My guest who's being way too vague over here is Wong Kar-wai. We're talking about any number of things. His newest movie as director is The Grandmaster. It's The Treatment. We were talking before, you mentioned a little bit about the kind of musicality. And before we started the interview, I mentioned that the way you concentrate on feet and the way the feet move across the floor, I was reminded of having read as a kid that Bruce Lee trained as a tango dancer.
Right.
Before he moved into martial arts. Mm-hmm. And there is the way the feet move across the floor is almost reminiscent of that thing that tango dancers do. But you've used music before, and oftentimes people haven't danced as the music is playing. And this time you have people dancing and there's no...
The funny thing is, you know, in this film, because we have few scenes about the childhood of both
characters, yeah,
Zhang Ziyi, and also we have a young Yip Man. And the directions that we look for a young Yip Man is to have someone like a young Bruce Lee. And we find few, and like the one in the film, they are very young tango dancer. In China, there's like there's school for students to practice like audience standard formal dance. And I couldn't find the right kids with that kind of air. And finally, we end up in one of the school, and they are amazing. And basically, you can see they did all this action perfect, and they have this dignity and kind of like very formal. And you see the similarities.
A very formal posture. I mean, that just that you were talking about the way the collars on these outfits made people hold their heads, but there's also a kind of a... The thing from tango dancers, everybody's told to stand up straight as if a string is pulling you up.
Yes,
and
right.
And that boy...
That's exactly the theory of martial arts.
Is it?
It's always you feel like you have a string to pull you up.
Well, that physicality you're talking about, that connects, that was one of the reasons that Bruce Lee had such an affinity for martial arts, because he trained as a dancer in that same kind of posture where you almost, like, your feet almost aren't touching the ground as you're walking.
No, he practiced all this dance because he wanted to attract girls, you know. That's the real story. And he's been very successful, you know.
Again, just so many of the movies, this really especially, though, I just found the contrasting musics tell so much of the story. Talk about the composers and what you got from them.
Well, I work with my regular composer, Yumi Yobayashi, and he's great. And this time, because there's in this film, there's so many orchestrations, and I also worked with a French composer, Ned. It's mainly to do all this arrangement based on Yumi's tracks. And the way I approach this film, the music, is besides of all this film score, I also used music from that time, that like the Beijing Opera, the authentic, and the Cantonese Opera. There's one track which I like very much at the end of the film, when there's like the final drinks between Gong Er and Yip Man. That song is called A Dream of Love. And that's amazing, that song. The singer was legendary. And also, I've used music from Morricone.
Oh, yes, there's a cue from Once Upon a Time in America.
You know why?
Why?
To me, this film, it's not just a kung fu film. For me, it's Once Upon a Time of Kung Fu. It's really telling not only the story but about this man or this period. It's the time and the time they went through. And I especially appreciate like works of Morricone or Sergio Leone.
Well, the way that
because no people don't make films like that anymore.
Well, but when they do, they try to use the action moments instead of the romantic moments.
Right.
And the way that Yip Man and Gong Er keep coming back to each other's lives over a period of years, it's kind of like De Niro and Elizabeth McGovern in Once Upon a Time in America, the way they're separated by years and they come back and they say they won't see each other again and they come back.
Right.
They don't belong together and they can't stay away from each other. And you use it after a fight for the first time, that Morricone cue. And it's just mesmerizing because it triggers, so even if you don't know that piece of music.
Exactly. And it's people who know that music, it gives you a different layer. So basically, the last 10 minutes of the film is a tribute to both of them. And in a way, it's like it's also a tribute to a certain way of filmmaking. And it's like today, for writer, as you know, your editor will tell you that people don't buy long sentence no matter how beautiful it's written. It's like the films, everything become like short, condensed. But in a way, it's very luxurious, but it is the time, for me, is wonderful.
It's interesting for me, too, because so many of the things you made have been about us watching an era that's dying out in front of us, about the end of an era. Certainly, Once Upon a Time in America is very much about an era ending. But again, because this is about an actual era coming to an end, it seemed all the more tragic to me than it has in past movies.
I'm very happy to make this film, even though it's very, very hard, but it's enjoyable. It's because it's not just a sadness or for nostalgic reasons to tell something which is not exists anymore. I want to, especially at a time like this, when China has went through this rapid changes, I can see there's a lot of traditional value has been forgotten. And in fact, the so-called modernization of China cannot simply just being like adopting Western value. It's time for us to return to our roots, to rediscover some of these values. And the reason I want to make this film is I want to bring the awareness, and to bring the awareness like something like martial arts. It's not just a skill, it's their wisdom. And it's something that we should revisit. And I hope we have taken the lead so that people can keep doing it, you know.
But the thing that separates this from all the other movies about an era dying out in front of us is that there is a message that's there to be carried forward. I mean, obviously the message, this thing you were just talking about, Yip Man passes on his legacy, which he talks about. And that's something that not only lives with us today, but has influenced the world in so many ways. So it's this thing about how, even though maybe a certain kind of behavior has died out and a certain kind of exercise of politeness and dignity, the fact is that so much of what he was talking about, so much of the way he led his life is still with us, which is the thing I found to be the most hopeful of any film you've ever made.
But all my film is very positive and with hope.
You heard
You don't agree?
You know what? I'm just here to listen to you talk. As somebody said to me earlier, whatever you say, you're the writer.
But the thing is, I insist on the title Grandmaster because it took me a lot of time to understand what a Grandmaster supposed to mean, because in the long history of Chinese martial art, there's so many great fighters, but only few can be called a Grandmaster. So after all this like research and meetings, interviews, I realized I come up with a kind of conclusion. To be a grandmaster, there's three qualities. First of all, you need to have the talents. You have to be a great fighter, but at the same time, you need to have vision. And then at the end is the generosities to share your skill with the future generations.
You've just described yourself. This is a perfect way to end. We're out of time. Carl Wine, thanks so much for being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Evis.
Oh, my pleasure. My guest is the filmmaker, Wong Kar-wai. His newest film, with the most mature title he's ever had, is The Grandmaster. Our recording engineer at KCRW is J.C. Swag. The show is mixed by Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm in the mood for love. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.